This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Is Sky Blues Extra.
Hello and welcome along to the Sky Blues Extra podcast, the first of the brand new 2022-23 campaign with myself, Dean Atkinson, and the man with the very best beard in the business, my very good friend Ross Cooper. Ross, welcome along.
Oh, hello, Dino, mate. We're back, mate. The duo, we're back for the new season. So we thought there's no better way to start the 22-23 campaign than having us two together.
Give the fans what they want. That's what I say.
Exactly. I have seen people calling for it on Twitter, Facebook, everywhere. You know, I had people coming up to me in my latest gig that I'm doing saying, look, when are you and Dino going to be back on the pod? And I said, well, you know, wait and see. So here we are.
Here we are. Week one. You love to see it, right?
Yes. Hopefully there won't be too many duns from me this week.
Well, let's not talk too soon because I think there might be one coming up at least for one performance. But it's great to be back in competitive action, isn't it? You know, it's been a long 84 days or, you know, 2,039 hours or, you know, 122,370 minutes or, you know, 7,342,200 seconds. But, you know, who's counting?
No, I mean...
Can you believe I actually worked that out today?
I can believe that, to be honest. I can. It doesn't surprise me at all because you're diligent. You do your homework, Dino. It's a weird one because when I think back to the West Brom game, I remember I was doing something that day when we were away and, you know, when Wilson saved the penalty. That, yeah, to me doesn't necessarily, because I went to a gig later on that day, that doesn't feel that long ago. But the Stoke game, which was the final game of the season, feels ages ago. And obviously that was sooner, so it's weird. But it's great for competitive football to be back. I think, for the last sort of week or two, I've been pumped, you know, thinking, yeah, about the Sunderland game and building up to it and having had a really good preseason. That always helps. You know, we know results in preseason are irrelevant. You know, we had a poor preseason last year and had a great start, but just for that sort of confidence, you know, particularly when we've not had, you know, a huge influx of signings, you know, when you look at it now, it's been a good window. But yeah, to have those wins was good, but obviously it comes down to what we do, you know, in competitive action.
You talk about a great preseason. What about a great preseason pod as well? Listeners, if you haven't listened to that yet, it is available. Or watched it. It is available on all good audio streaming services, such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the like. And of course, as Ross has just mentioned there, also available on YouTube. Before we get into all things Sky Blue, though, Ross, I do want to mention that unbelievable performance from the Lionesses over the summer. England are European champions. I don't think I'd ever say those words.
No, it's brilliant, isn't it? And I think you know, especially with England, you know, growing up, we've become accustomed to sort of disappointment, you know, and obviously, you know, most recent only being, you know, 12 months ago, you know, the men's final, get, you know, getting to penalties again and another disappointment. So for this tournament, you know, for the ladies, the women to play like they did and then get to the final against Germany at home at Wembley, almost the chance to sort of do what the men couldn't do, you know, on home soil against the Germans. It was incredible. And obviously, as the game went on, it wouldn't have been a proper England performance without that little hiccup, you know, without that goal.
The nervy bit,
No, and obviously, you know, I think we were all thinking the same thing as it went into extra time, thinking, please, not penalties, not penalties. But it was weird. I had a funny feeling. I thought, you know, that they've got, they, I feel like they felt like they had that spark in them, you know, to do something. And they had a little period, a little wobble after, you know, after the goal, but then the second, you know, in the extra time, they came again and obviously got that goal. And what a moment. It was incredible. It was sort of, it was amazing. And obviously once the final whistle went and just seeing the joy on their faces, you know, and because obviously, you know, the women that are paid nowhere, you know, like compared to say the England sort of superstars, the men's, you know, they're not on anywhere near the same sort of money and everything. But what
you
was
look at,
brilliant,
like, the central contracts only sort of started to come in after I think it was like 2009 final, 2010. So that's when they started to, it's still not big money, of course, but that's when they started to sort of get an air of professionalism around them.
But what that brings in such a good way, I think, as a fan watching, is you look at them and you just see the pure, unbridled joy. Do you know what I mean? Of playing the game, the sport they love. And I'm not saying the men don't, but sometimes you can feel so distant from them because they've got all this money and they live this superstar lifestyle. Whereas I feel like you could see any of these women, these amazing women who've achieved this. You know what I mean? Just walk down the street and they'd be like anyone. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, aunties, you know, or whatever, whoever it might be. I thought it was brilliant. It was amazing. And seeing the interviews and just the raw passion on all of their faces. I thought Prince William as well, I thought he looked so chuffed.
Do you know what I liked? You know, when he was giving out the medals and stuff, he was going in for a double pat release and giving people hugs, you know, that's what I liked
he
to
looked
see.
So, I completely agree. He looked so genuine though. Like you could see in his face, he sort of got red in the face. He was so proud and chuffed. And I thought it's amazing. I literally was there all week thinking, I hope they win it. This is huge, you know.
Do you think it'll be a catalyst for maybe, you know, Cov to now look at getting an official, you know, affiliation with a team? I know we've had Cov ladies in the past and there's Coventry United ladies or whatever they're called now. I'm not too sure with the rigmarole they had during last season. But it would be nice if this was the sort of catalyst to you know, have our own ladies team.
It would. And it was.
It cost money, though. It cost a lot of money,
But the other way to look at it would be, maybe can it act as the catalyst for a lot of support to go to Coventry United ladies?
Yeah,
you know, they're already there. Can we support them? And I think, you know, the one thing you want it to do now is, like, you know, it will shed that light, you know, even more on the women's game, and people will go, you know, they can't paint them with the same brush that the men have had, you know, serial losers, you know, bottlers or whatever you want to call it. The women have gone and done it. They've done it. The European champions, and they fully deserve it. And I just felt so happy just watching, seeing how happy they were. It was a really proud moment. And obviously from all of us at Sky Blues Extra, huge congratulations to them.
I'm sure that will get passed on through the chaders. have you listened to Ross on that Sky Blues Extra podcast? He said thanks. Oh, well done. I know you love a stat. How about this one for you? Right, the last time that England won an international football tournament, it preceded the season in which Coventry City got promoted to the top English division.
I love a stat, and that is a very good stat. I like that, Dino.
Can lightning strike twice, Ross? That's what I need to say. All credit to Roger Ellis on Twitter, by the way, for pointing this one out on Twitter today. But yeah, can it strike twice? Why not?
Yes, it can. Why? You got to believe. I believe. I do, and we're going to discuss more. Obviously, you know, we've only one game in, but of course it can. You know, of course it can. Why not, hey?
Why not, indeed. Let's kick off then with our opening game of this new campaign. taking on Sunderland at the Stadium of Bright, as I like to call it now. And Ross, to be honest, it was a game of performance that absolutely stunk of, in quotation marks, first game of the season vibes, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I think you're never really at your fluid best open day of the season. We weren't last year either against Nottingham Forest for 55, 60 minutes. And then we came into it. We were very rusty. There was actually quite a lot of similarities. But
yeah,
you got to add in the context of this was Sunderland's cup final. They were back.
Love that.
4 years.
Absolutely love that. Get those digs in early. I'd love to see
They're not digs. They're facts. they came out.
I only deal it in facts.
I only deal with facts. And they all came out. I'm going to go Rafa Benitez and go facts. Get out my sheet in a minute. But they all came out to see Wardy and the Sky Blue Army, 40,000 or whatever it was. So you got to factor that in. It was their big day, in the same way that, it's probably a similar euphoria like we had last year. Forest come into town, you know, they'd have been thinking, oh, okay, this is going to be tough because there's a party atmosphere. So it was a performance of a bit tentativeness, a bit rustiness, which played into their hands, which is what they'd have wanted. We didn't do what we didn't counter it by stamping our authority on the game early enough.
Especially that first 35 minutes, we just seemed lethargic was the word I probably used to describe it. Just everything felt sloppy, both in possession, passing, the shape, the movement. It just all looked really, really tiresome.
Yeah, very safe. But a lack of quality. There was no tempo to our play. There was no real... When we got it, you never felt, especially like you say, in the first 25, 30 minutes, you never felt that we wanted to get at them.
Have any control. No control.
No, it was sort of like we almost... It was shades of our first year back in the Championship where we sort of were just trying to almost feel our way into the game, not do anything awful. Yeah. And try and feed our way in the game. And then when we'd get our spell, then we could dictate. But the problem was, we didn't do that. We conceded relatively early.
Let's start with the selection. Then there was a couple of calls Mark Robbins made, which sort of tweaked the eyeball, shall we say. Josh Eccles was given the nod over Fankity Dabba right back. And Allen was brought in. When there was calls for either Tavares or Palmer to play instead of obviously the injured O'Hare, we'll talk about O'Hare later on. But what was your thoughts on that selection?
Eccles was the one that stood out obviously immediately, and we've all been big fans, big admirers of him. We all predicted in that summer pod that he'll have a really good season. But I was surprised because I felt like Dabo was fit. There hadn't been any, and he was sharp and also had a good preseason, and I felt like he was the obvious choice to start, because also I was convinced Allen was going to start. I really did. I know he's going to play, meaning that if Eccles was at least on the bench, you'd have a central midfield option on the bench
to swap,
which we didn't have because Eccles started and so did Allen, meaning we literally had a load of great defenders, Palmer, and then attackers, so we didn't have a central midfielder there. It was a surprise as well because and we'll come more to him shortly, but obviously, Bidwell's quite conservative on the left side. So Eccles is as well. I think defensively, he can be quite good. And last year, he showed at right wing back, he's more than capable. Speaks a lot about Todd Kane, that he's not there. If Dabo's not going to start, it looks like he'll probably be off, won't he, between now and the end of the season. But Dabo at least gives you that, the way he ended last season, that attacking threat, that power, he defends well. And it just felt like suddenly we were very, very safe. It felt with Allen as well. It was very safe. And he's not going to replicate O'Hare. He doesn't score goals.
But he's a different type of player. That's the thing. You can't... it's hard to replicate O'Hare with money and going out and physically buying somebody. So to have somebody in our ranks that you think is going to replace him, it's just not going to happen. And he's a totally different type of player.
No, exactly. But it was sort of... As a result, I just felt like in this formation, we then lost what the wing back should bring us by having Eccles. We then lost what the cam behind the two strikers should bring us, and not through Allen's fault, but you know, him being the only cam, he plays, he did well enough last year in the box, you know, when he had O'Hare with him. But we lost that. So we had no link between the strikers. We didn't have that wide outlet. They weren't high enough forward. So then as a result, it was, you know, Robin spoke about it afterwards that we were turning the ball over too cheaply. And that's because we literally had no options.
It was like 15 to 20 yards of space between Sheaf and Hamer and the forward line. And Alan was trying his best to get in between both, but it felt like he was like playing as part of a midfield three rather than an attacking midfielder for most part, only especially in possession. Whereas in possession, you need to have your attacking midfielder way further up the pitch, and it just didn't seem to be the case. So I was quite confused about how we sort of, you know, what was the approach when we were in possession. And it wasn't like Sunderland were like completely on us and forcing us into mistakes. We were making mistakes off our own back.
And it was just, they weren't great either. I mean, this is the thing. We apart from one very poor moment, the goal, we actually almost, you know, we got away with sort of just feeling our way into the game because they really weren't doing anything either. It was like they were feeling their way into the game. You know, they didn't play like a team who came out the traps. Do you know what I mean? Big return, etc. So it was frustrating, but I mean, obviously we're going to get to it. I think in the first half system, it all comes down to the wing backs. It really does, you know.
Well, let's talk the wing backs there because, you know, let's focus on Jake Bidwell to begin with. And, you know, as fans and, you know, as sort of, I'll call us analysts on this podcast. We had suspicions early that he wasn't really up to the standard that we require in that wing back position and to suit our style. And yesterday, I think he stood out like an absolute sore thumb.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing to say is, you know, we want him to have a really good season. I want him to be really good. I want him to be the player that I saw for Swansea against us last year when we lost at the CBS. And he literally didn't let Dabo get past him once. He looked really strong. He looked quick. And I thought, wow. And so then suddenly in January when we were like, oh, we were set to sign him, I was thinking, I was buzzing because I thought, I remember how good he was against us. And obviously then the first year when he came in, yeah, you put down to it of halfway through the season and you sort of try to make allowances. He clearly wasn't, it's like he was getting used to how much our wingbacks need to get forward as opposed to maybe Russell Martin's sort of more possession-based sort of wingbacks. So I thought, I had hopes that, and look, we're one game in, but I had hopes that, you know, full preseason now, he feels part of the team, part of the furniture a bit more.
Understands the way that, they play
yeah,
a bit more.
That he'd, you know, he'd be at it. He looks in good shape as well. Came back in pre-season. Yep. And I thought, you know, I obviously went to Leamington, went to Warsaw. He didn't play against Warsaw, but Leamington he did. And, you know, he looked really in really good shape there. So what's frustrating is it, I mean, you can talk about it as well, Dino, but
he hasn't took that into the season in a game where he really should assert his dominance because the two wingers are not going to get that far up the pitch.
And then when they don't do that, and when that's symmetrical on both wingbacks, with both of them not getting high, we lose the way we want to play. And the thing with Bidwell is, you look at his stats from a couple of years ago of Swansea, he scored goals, he got a really good amount of assists. So you're thinking, okay, his delivery should be really good or on point. And it just wasn't. It looks like he doesn't have confidence to get past his man at all. Like everything, it's frustrating to watch because, like I say, I really want him to be good, and there's still obviously plenty of time left in the season. But it's frustrating, especially when, like you say, we had Mattson. You look at Ian Mattson, right, on Friday, and obviously we saw him, you know, obviously Friday for Burnley, but we saw him more last year. He would, you know what I mean, when he was on it, when he was good, you know, he was so high up the pitch, he was like level with the strikers. So literally, the cam would have it, O'Hare, and you'd have Gyökeres and Godden if you'd be playing the two. And then literally, you'd have the left and right wing backs level with them.
And the one time in this game that actually happened, we played an unbelievable passage of play, one-touch football, Panzo into Hamer, into Sheaf, Sheaf outside of the boot, down the channel, and Bidwell was off. He was gone. And then the final ball. He has two simple options, and he plays the ball over the first one, and it's just ridiculous. Like the the final ball. It's just, you know, not even an amateur would make that mistake, I feel. Well, and that shows he has it in the locker, but he just didn't do it enough.
You know, yeah, exactly. And then the thing is, surely the way we play like that, obviously they do it on the training pitch, but you sort of think, well, you know, Robin's alluded to it, to be fair, in the second half, even when Dabba put across and about, the strikers making the runs and stuff. But you also need the ball to be put in the area where the strikers make the runs. But the biggest disappointment for me with Bidwell's performance was the defending for the goal.
Yeah, because, let's talk about the goal. Yeah.
Because you know what? For everything people have said about him, you know, criticised Bidwell, say, going forward, I've always thought, especially when he filled in left centre-back, you know what? I think he's a really good defender. And that's what I remember in the Swansea game last year when he played and he literally had Dabo out the game. Dabo did nothing because I thought, wow, he doesn't let anyone get past him. He's a big guy. He's strong. He reads the game well. He's committed. There's a lot of good traits about Bidwell. And then for this goal, I mean, I watched it thinking, if this is all teams have to do to score, like to get past our man and put a cross in, he had to do nothing. It wasn't like step over City. It was literally drop the shoulder
and gone.
And he left him in the dust.
Yeah. I mean, the first issue he has, he stands off the player far too much to begin with. When the player gets the ball, you know, he doesn't control it very well. He should be on him.
Engage,
straight in there. Give him no time to maneuver that ball out of his feet. Once he's done that, he's got Bidwell on absolute toast, hasn't he, at that point? He's done.
He can't get back, so then he can't stop the cross. Like you say, it all starts with that initial, the moment where he engages. You know, he either has to drop off and
force show him inside
and read it, yes, or if you engage straight away, like you say, the bad touch. And obviously then the cross comes in. And then, you know, I'm a huge fan of Simon Moore. You know, love him, but I mean, I don't know what's going on there.
That was his best Bilbo Baggins adventure, wasn't it? Impression.
Ridiculous.
And also, Dom Hoyom doesn't jump.
Yeah, that's frustrating. But the thing is, if Moore stays on his line, it's still 0-0. He just catches it. He lets it bounce. And then literally, it's then Bidwell's error for the thing doesn't lead to a goal. You know, I mean, he's actually sort of, we're not talking about it. We're maybe talking about him in a slightly different way. Because Simon Moore doesn't, I mean, obviously, if Simon Moore ultimately is the one who, I guess, cost the goal, but it could have been prevented. And that was what was frustrating with Bidwell in the game. But obviously we've got Taiwo Aridamolo, who obviously wasn't in the squad.
He did travel though. I saw him in the behind the scenes.
He's supposed to be rapid. He's supposed to. So you feel like it's going to be interesting to see how Robbins rotates it. Obviously Robbins has alluded to the amount of games we've got, but you wonder whether at home, for example, Rotherham, whether get at these teams.
There's no doubt about it that Adam Amola plays next week. No doubt in my mind he will be straight into that team.
You think starting?
I don't think Matt Robbins, for all we say about he's got favourites, I don't think he could look at Bidwell's performance yesterday and say, that's how I want to approach a game at left back or left wing back.
No.
There's no doubt in my mind Adam Amola will play next week.
And Dabo. Dabo will be in as well.
Yeah, of course he will. Listen, the whole Dabo situation was weird. He played four of the last five preseason games. He played, 45 minutes a time. You can't tell me he's not fit.
No. He looked fit when he came on.
Yeah, of course he did. It was such a peculiar way, which, you know, screams to me Mark Robbins was a little bit apprehensive yesterday in that team setup in that first half.
Yes, you're right there. I think so.
And I think he was a little bit afraid that it was a bit of a cauldron for, you know, this team to go into first game of the season. And in a way, I don't begrudge that. It was going to be a difficult game. I've been saying it all along. But after 20 minutes or so, you're seeing the game progress and you're thinking, hold on a minute, we need to get a foothold here. And the way we do that is via our wing backs. And if these boys are not pushing forward and you're joining the attack, then we've got nothing going for us. And it showed.
The thing I noticed, and obviously, we've had such a consistent style of play with Robbins. But when Panzo got the ball on the left side and Heim got it, like the amount of times Panzo had to like go back because he didn't have Bidwell making those runs.
No one was pushing. But Eccles was making the run and then Heim could get the pass out to him.
Yeah. So it was the disjointed factor. And then, like you say, if then they play a ball into midfield, you still need Bidwell or Eccles bombing beyond. So they've got that angled pass again. like you say, and as the game went on, even after they scored, you looked at it and went, if we actually do just command our authority here, like, we're well in this game. Like, these actually really are a League One side.
Of course, yeah. On paper, they're definitely a League One side. Okay, they had a couple of decent performances yesterday, but there's no doubt in my mind Sunderland will struggle this season. I think that's, you know, part and parcel of when you come up from League One, you are going to struggle. And I think Sunderland aren't any different to that.
I agree. 100%. I think that the goal they scored was completely of our own doing, but then they really didn't really threaten there. That one shot in the second half, they had a shot in the first half, shot in the second, which more saved. But other than that, we obviously grew into it.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the star performances yesterday, you mentioned him just there, Panzo. I thought he had an excellent game. Both, you know, asserting some dominance. There was that one-on-one situation with Stewart early in that first half. He looked absolutely solid there. Didn't let him off with anything. And then the strike off the bar. It was nearly cash in for everybody who had a bet on Panzo to score any time.
Are we seeing Jake Clark-Salter shoot from 35 yards? No. Absolutely no chance.
Normally, when you hear the crowd go, shoot, you know, it's always a woeful effort. But my God.
He looks like he's got real quality. Like, I think he clearly looks like he's clearly good with the ball at his feet.
He's a Rolls Royce of a player.
Yeah, he is. He is. The way he sort of glides around the pitch, you know. Yeah. It looks like he makes up ground without look like he never mm-hmm. looks like he's
phased.
In desperate.
Yeah.
You know, he's never got in that stage of like, oh crap, the player's gone, I'm in trouble. I always felt like
he has control.
He's got control.
Yeah.
He knows where the guy is. He knows what to do to deal with him. And yeah, really good debut for him. And again, he showed, and we've all been crying out for it at different times. And to be fair, Robbins has been playing it a lot in preseason. When we moved to the back four, he fitted in perfectly in that central defence. Yeah.
And the big chance fell to the man you'd want it to fall to, Matty Godden. Gilt edge opportunity. It was just head in hands moment, isn't it? And to be fair, he has held his hands up and apologised. But, you know, got to score, Matty.
The thing is, it's, again, great pressing from the front. You know, we're really good at that. You know, winning the ball. It was Hamer, I think, won it. And I think Godden thinks someone's around
behind him.
Because he literally could have took a touch and then finished it. Because the defender's nowhere near him.
Could Hamer have took that ball on as well, do you think?
He potentially could have. We literally had a queue of people. Like, you couldn't ask for a better chance to score. And obviously, Matty Godden knows this. And look, I love Matty Godden. Given that 10 times, he scores 9 of them.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happened that the one was on Sunday. And look, I've seen people on Twitter saying, you know, if that was Waghorn or whatever, that, you know, and missed that, you'd be getting a hell of a lot more abuse than Godden. I mean, he probably would be.
Yeah, but I wonder why.
Well, the reason is because obviously, you know, Matty Godden scored 12 goals last year, was injured for part of the season. I think Tyler Walker would have scored that, to be fair. I do. I love Godden. I think he thought someone was on him.
Yeah.
Because he hit it so well. But he literally could have took a touch and just side-footed it past the keeper. But that's a moment in the game when you suddenly go, if we score there, we win the game.
Yeah,
win the game.
And then you kind of doubt it yourself, thinking, you know, this isn't our day here and now, is it?
Yeah.
You know, you get those thoughts in your mind, especially as a Coventry City fan. Oh, it's part and parcel, isn't it?
You start thinking, is it going to be one of those days?
Yeah.
You know,
But we grew into the game. I thought the natives got restless at the stadium of Bright. We turned the tide. And the atmosphere got really intense, I thought, at that point, because all you could hear was the Sky Blue Army, and it was just boos and jeers and jitters from the home crowd.
They got even quieter, and they
do 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 football in a library.
Do, do, do. But no, they got
that
even
was quite
quieter.
Actually. Can I just mention that was quite funny because I think it was the lead commentator. I don't know his name on Sky.
Don Goodman.
No, he can't say Coventry, by the way.
He says Coventry.
That's a bad impression. But yeah, the actual lead commentator was like, Can the Sky Blues turn the tide of this atmosphere? It's rocketed here. And then all you hear is the Cup fans singing, doo, 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 football in the library.
It does make me laugh.
It's the absolute Sunderland loving affair with Sky, though, isn't it? It's so annoying.
It's boring. It's almost as boring as Vincent Kompany's Burnley already, you know, one game in. But no, you're right. We the biggest thing is they kept giving the ball away. And every time they did, you could hear the groan. We Panzo having the ball literally 10 yards in their half. You know, we were then getting on top, and you suddenly felt like, okay, we're in command here. I feel like every time they couldn't get out, it was sustained attacks, sustained pressure, sustained territory. And obviously, that was then further sort of compounded with the changes. And the subs, and it was good. You know, we talked a lot last year about Robins and subs, and this year he can make five, and he actually made a few in quite a short space of time.
Matt Robins went into full fuck it mode, didn't he, at that point? I don't think I've ever seen him do that. He like went four at the back, completely restructured the midfield and those front lines, and the tide changed dramatically with Frankie Dabo's appearance and Tavares. The link up right between side. Them two was unbelievable.
The Sky co-commentator, he kept saying that Jack Clark, who was on the left, hadn't been tested. He was on a yellow card. He was on a yellow card, but Eccles hadn't tried to test him once. We didn't have then a right winger because obviously it's down to the wing back. So then suddenly he had an easy afternoon defensively. He would then change it. And it's clearly something we've been working on. We've seen it in pre-season, four at the back, this 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1, however, you know, it sort of fluid, you know, changes between that depending on, you know, defensive and offensive structure. But it completely changed the game. Dabo came on and was exactly what we needed. Tavares came on, and you know what? I watched him, you know, 40,000 championship game. I thought he's ready. He's ready to play a big part, whether that's 100%. Off the bench. He 100%. He looked so lively off the right. And actually, this was the formation that when we beat Forest in pre-season, and it was Walker in the middle, Vic on the left, Tavares on the right.
Even Walker looked up for it yesterday.
Walker looked proper up for it. And Vic, he is great off the left, because actually, how many times do you see him on that left? Even when he's playing just as a striker, cutting on his right foot, you know, and dribble, stuff like
the
that.
Classic
and
then Thierry Henry position.
Yeah, it worked a treat, actually. And then obviously Casey Palmer came on. Fads was the one to leave, which obviously makes sense. And then we had Panzo and Higham at the back four. Bidwell then played better, you know, because I think he's a left back.
Yeah, he's a left back.
Yep. He's a left back.
Everything just seemed to go...
Click. Everything clicked. And we looked still great defensively. And I thought Palmer showed some moments. He linked up with Hamer a few times. He was close to them, you know, him and Sheaf. And there was moments where I thought, you could see there's a little bit rustiness there. But I thought there was a couple of moments where he had that shot. He took it, turned, got the shot away. Yes, it went over the bar. But I thought, I see something here. Like he tried a couple of passes. They were over hit. They went out of play. But they were the right idea. They were the right passes. It was just the execution. So I saw moments. But like you say, Tavares and Dabo down the right-hand side, suddenly we were causing problems, getting crosses in the box. And you just felt like it's coming.
Yeah, and the atmosphere changed. And, you know, talking of atmospheres, I don't know if you've seen it, Ross, but some of the footage from the Sky Blue Tavern on the socials yesterday, it looked like a brilliant day there. Tons of people getting fully stuck into that fantastic beer selection, of course, including the Sky Blue Army Lager, which, take it from me, was a brilliant pint. And I am by no means a beer drinker.
And remember, so if you get a pint of Sky Blue Army Lager, that money goes to the club. You know, so it's a great way to support the club as well. And I'm sure people were having a nice curry and enjoying some food and stuff as well. So, the footage looks amazing. And it's a great place to watch the game, especially when you're away from home on Sky, because obviously, you know, only the elite supporters with the amount of points can go. So everyone else on low points can go to the tavern and watch it together.
Yeah, and if you are unaware, the Sky Blue Tavern are our brand new sponsors at Sky Blue Texture this year. Some brilliant deals in tow at the tavern too. A beer and a curry for less than a tenner. Unbelievable value. So listeners, make sure the next time the Sky Blues are away from home on the telly, get yourself down there and get stuck in. Just like the Sky Blues did, they got stuck into this game, and the Big Vic energy came to the throw once again. 1-1.
Superb goal. Superb
unbelievable goal.
Panzo bringing it forward again. We had them penned in. Panzo had it 10 yards inside Sunderland half, played the ball to Vic, and excellent, great turn, like he does, quick feet, took it to the right, and what a strike. I mean, he hit that so hard and like so cleanly. The keeper had absolutely no chance. Like it was right in the corner, but he hit it so well. It was like in the back of the net before you knew it.
I want the sound of that ball hitting the net as my new text ringtone.
Yeah.
It's so clean.
I want Fabio Tavares shushing the Sunderland fans as my new phone background.
That is class. Yeah, we need a better picture from Getty Images, that for sure. Hopefully there is one around somewhere. But yeah, unbelievable strike. And we talked about last year with Vic. When he has time to think about things, he seems to make an error. Whereas yesterday, it was just a snapshot out of nowhere. And it was just hit with such conviction. And you see that in the first half where he took those two players on, come inside. And he knows he has to clip that round the corner into the far corner. But this goal, he just hits the ball out of nothing, really. And it finds the back of the net. A bit like the Cardiff game last year when he did exactly the same.
100%. And the Stoke game where, you know, he was on that massive drought and just shot. When he's instinctive, when he, like you say, when he doesn't think about it, he is, he's unreal. You know, because, you know, we all know about, he actually had a really poor game overall, I thought. He was quite quiet.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what makes a great player, that out of nothing, when it was instinctive, he took it. And you could almost see it. Just thought, yeah, he's going to hit it. And it back in the net. But like you say, there's games where he's not the cleanest of finishers, or wasn't last season. This season, he may well be. Where, like you say, he gets time on it and you sort of go, you know, what's he going to do?
Yeah.
Whereas when he doesn't have time to think about it, when he's sort of under that pressure and he's just in the moment.
Yeah.
He hits the ball so well, and it was a brilliant goal, and it was no less than what we deserved at that point.
100%. Obviously, one big downside to yesterday is the news of Callum O'Hare and his hamstring injury. Obviously, all the Cov fans went into absolute meltdown, as they do Friday night and Saturday. Obviously, talk of Burnley coming back in. Was the hamstring a sort of ploy to say that he's actually off? But Mark Robbins sort of made that clear yesterday in his post-match comments to say that Callum is not going anywhere and it is just a hamstring injury that he has got in training. Last kick of training as well, which is very, very frustrating.
Very Coventry City, that. Back heel, last kick of training, trying to back heel, and he's felt a tweak. Look, the word tweak and felt something to me suggests, and hopefully is only is minor, weak, rather than a serious tear.
Yeah,
you know,
like
which
a
is
Liam
like,
Kelly.
Yeah, where you go, there's a problem here. The evasiveness of Robbins, and Robbins can be quite like that, suggests to me, actually, it might not be that bad. But, you know, Robbins always likes to sort of quell your expectations.
Yeah, he downplays everything.
He downplays things, right? He tries to always, but he under-promises, but he under-promises. Under-promises, but and over-delivers. Like he'd rather make you think something's not going to happen, or, you know, temper your expectations. And if it happens sooner, which might be the reality, then we go, oh, great. He's very honest. He wouldn't.
Can I just remind you that he did say he had three players lined up in the first week of the transfer window, and
that's what I mean. When Robbins actually does say something where you go, oh, but the Ali's getting excited, then it doesn't happen. Then everyone's like, nah. But no, it's a real shame. How I felt when, I wasn't worried that it was anything to do with a transfer or anything, but how I felt him not being in the starting 11, then made me go, oh, this is how I'd feel every week if we sold him. Look, he's a big loss. We love him. Hopefully his injury is just until the 2nd of September. Window slams shut and all of a sudden the magic sponges out and he's back. Look, the sooner he's back, the better.
We missed him yesterday, didn't we? He's that link, that missing link between the forward line and the midfield, and you know the ball retention and the you know but moving the ball up the field is so important in the way we play to then involve the wing backs, and Callum is the one that really really involves the wing backs. So yeah, it's disappointing. Maybe that was the issue yesterday.
I think it was, but I do think the first half the wing backs was the problem. I think O'Hare would thrive in that four at the back, 4-2.
I thought you were going to say O'Hare would thrive in that Burnley team.
No, not at all. No, absolutely not.
Actually, he did not fit in that Burnley team whatsoever. Even the way, if that's the way they're going to play on Friday night, There's no reason for them to
listen,
have
Vincent. I know you're listening, Vincent Kompany. If you're listening to this, he will not fit as a winger. Last time I saw O'Hare on the wing was MK Dons back in League One away, 0-0. It was Hiwula, O'Hare, and Bakayoko as the front three. No, O'Hare's can.
I remember that game. I went on to BBC CWR afterwards. Hiwula missed a penalty, didn't he?
He missed a penalty. Yeah, and I went and got a massive KFC afterwards.
Missed out on that.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, yeah, we could have gone Nando's.
Yeah, well, we could have. That's that. If you're playing Nando's bingo, listeners, there's the first one of the season. There'll be plenty more to come. Unfortunately, there's no loyalty card on this one to get you a free quarter of a chicken, but it's a nice game to play.
But no, he is a big miss. Hopefully, it won't be long because he gives you that X factor, you know. And but like people had said on Twitter, he's not really had an injury since we've had him. So obviously at some point, you know, it's going to happen. Hopefully it is just one that, you know, keeps him out for a few, you know, handful of games, and then he can come back and help the team again. So look, it was a loss, I think, but we did show with that four at the back, actually, we did show that actually we did look effective. I think the problem in the first half was, and then you instantly go, oh, where's O'Hare? Is because, you know, the wing backs weren't, you know, if we'd had, you know, Dabo and Aradamola playing, you know, on either wing in the first half, and we were
totally
bombing forward.
Game. Totally different.
Totally
game.
Different game. Yeah. You know. Hopefully it won't be long. We'll wait and see, I guess.
But that also fills me with confidence, because if we have Aradamola and Dabo come in, at least we know that if we drop to a four, we've got an option there that we can play differently. And it kind of worked. I know it was only against Sunderland, but it definitely worked against them.
It did work. They've clearly been working on it. As I say, we've seen it against Forest, seen it, Leamington, seen it other games as well. Tavares, really exciting player, because we're not then playing with wingers as such, but these inside forwards, you know, supporting, you know, Vic on one side, Tavares, Walker, you could have Walker or Godden there. Then you've got Palmer or O'Hare in that sort of cam, you know, or, you know, in the midfield three with Sheaf and Hamer. Suddenly you go, this is exciting. I mean, Dabo was still getting so high up. You know, I mean, he was like on the byline putting crosses in.
Yeah.
And you sort of feel like, this is exciting. Like we're almost sort of, we're sort of suffocating him, aren't we?
He flashed that one across the box and someone just needed to, you know, take a gamble on a front post run because the keeper just grabbed out of thin air.
It's a goal. If someone's there, just flicks it.
Yeah. So light at the end of the tunnel for the Sky Blues. Maybe there is a plan A, B and C this season after all. So let's look forward to that. Let's get your man of the match then, Ross, for the first game of the season.
For us, I think Jonathan Panzo, man of the match. I thought coming in, you know, to the back three and obviously playing in the back four, new signing, you know, still getting used to his surroundings and teammates. I thought he looked really gifted, accomplished player. And I think there's more to come, clearly. He's already shown in pre-season, he's got an eye for goal. He showed again in Sunderland that he can also kick it as well as head it. And you know, almost scored the goal of the season. That'd have been it, you know, if that had flown in. So, yeah, Panzo for me.
You're listening to Sky Blues Extra.
Next up for the Sky Blues, we entertain Paul Warne's Rotherham United, who are spending their seventh season in a brand new league. Got a lot of recent history against Rotherham, don't we, Ross? One of the teams that obviously we had to beat to stay up effectively a couple of seasons ago. It's nice to see them back at the CBS.
Yeah, and I think it's their first visit to the CBS with fans and stuff, because obviously we were at Birmingham year before when we played them, etc. So yeah, Rotherham's a weird one. I know in our preseason pod at the Tavern, people thought I didn't like them or something, because I said, they were, you know, going to finish rock bottom. But I actually quite like Paul Warne. I like his sort of honesty. He's so forthright with his answers. You know, he literally doesn't hide anything either.
No, he seems the type of manager that you'd want to do anything for as a player.
I think he wears his heart on his sleeve. I think by the end of the season, he always sounds and looks so exhausted. Like he literally puts his, you know, blood, sweat and tears, life and soul into it. Obviously, he's Mark Robins' former strike partner, so they've got a bit of history.
He feels like one of the good guys of English football management, like Mark Robins.
Yeah, I do. I think Paul Warner's never really, like, he always speaks honest. Like, if we beat Rotherham, when we beat them at St. Andrews, you know, in the behind closed door season, he was honest and was like, you know, yeah, we didn't really deserve to get anything today. You know, he doesn't sugarcoat anything. There's so many managers, like, who, like, it was funny because obviously they drew to Swansea and obviously it wasn't at the game or anything. And I listened to Paul Warren speak about the game, and then you listen to Russell Martin speak about the game, and you know which is the most close to what actually happened. It's what Paul Warren says, because he said they, you know, we could have lost the game, but he all went, yeah, we could have won it. Whereas Russell Martin is like, well, you know, it's all just Swansea. It's all, you know, rose tinted glasses. So I like Paul Warren. You know, during that COVID season when we were fighting relegation as well, I didn't particularly like them when they had about four games in hand and they seemed to postpone them all the time. I did have a little period of not liking them. But look, I just don't think, and he's even admitted it, Paul Warren, that, yeah, they're getting gazumped, not financially necessarily, but also just by club size. You know, they struggle to get the players in. Look, it's going to be a tough game. They got a good point at home. They're going to want to build on that.
I don't think that's a good point, by the way. I think that's an absolutely brilliant point. Against a Swansea team that absolutely dominated possession. Some really, really good attacking threats in that Swansea side. And they really, really, you know, back to the wall, played really well.
No, they did. They did, to be fair. And as you make a good point, and Swansea did, you know, if you haven't seen it, watch this Obafemi's miss.
It's a sickener, isn't it?
You'd be a miss score that, season. Dino. You'd score that.
Hey, now, I was a prolific goal scorer in the under 13th and 14th Coventry and North District League.
But I'm sure you were. very good point. And they'll be pleased with that because, when they've gone up and down, you don't want to start with a defeat. They're on the board. They're off the mark. Look, they come to the CBS now. We're at home. We've got, you know, look, Sunderland, you know, big rivals. I wanted to beat them. But in the cold light of day, after the event, I'll take the point. You know, we came back from behind. If we can go and beat Rotherham, which we need to do, then it'll be a good start to the season.
And they're never easy games against Rotherham, though. We never seem to have it, you know, easy. You know, we lost 4-0 a couple of seasons back and we beat them 3-1 at home in the season they got relegated. But they're all tough games. They really give each team a run for their money in this division. They match up really, really well.
Look, they're very defensively well organised. They have a style. You know, they use what they've got well. And to their benefit, they will look to be solid, and they will think, first thing, frustrate. Keep a clean sheet. And if they frustrate, and as the game goes on and the longer it's 0-0 and they get a set piece, they get a corner, long throw, and we switch off for a second, it'll end up in the back of the net, and then we're chasing the game. And I'm done everyone with chasing the game. Last season we went behind far too often.
27 points gained, though, from losing positions, the most in the division.
But you can't keep doing that.
No, you can't keep doing that. Your luck runs out effectively at some point.
But also there's been certain things where, you know, a couple of goals, and it was quite right that the referees played that extra time, but they might not play that extra time. They might blow the whistle and we might referee. And then suddenly we don't score that goal against Preston. We don't score that goal against Blackburn. When we're on top in games, we need to score. We need to take the lead. And if we do that, we're very good at getting a result, if not all 3 points.
We haven't done that enough to, you know, showing our dominance and asserting ourselves on matches. And that's something maybe that could change this season. That maybe is the difference that takes into, you know, contention for the top six. So
100% it is, because yes, we got however many points from losing positions, but there was games where we went behind and unfortunately we just couldn't get back and get a result and we lost the game. If we take the lead in those games, especially when Luton at home, I remember distinctly because we were all over them. Hamer just got his new contract. We were absolutely battering them. Vic missed an unbelievable chance. They went up the other end, scored from literally like level with the byline. Like it was so tight angle. And I literally sat there, like laughed and just like, you can't believe it. And then we go, lo and behold, we go and lose the game.
Yeah, we're chasing.
We're chasing.
And these are the sort of teams you don't want to be chasing against.
No.
And these are the games where if you have any promotion ambitions, you definitely need to pick up 3 points. And it will be a very, very different Rotherham side heading to the CBS. A lot of different players have come into the ranks. And a lot of their big names have actually left this season, which is remarkable, coming back to the Championship. The likes of Michael Smith, Michael Ekweke, Freddie Ladapo, Angus McDonald, a huge amount of experience there, 29, 30, 31 years old, that have just lost coming into, you know, what's going to be a very tough year at the bottom of this Championship division.
Well, imagine if, you know, the year we win the league, if suddenly Matty Godden, our top goal scorer, went, you know, went and...
That's three of those whistles you've done tonight.
Yeah, I know, I'm on a roll.
You'd be practicing.
If you're playing whistle bingo, everybody. But like, yeah, Fads, and gone, full line. But like, yeah, look, they've lost a lot of experience. But the other thing with Paul Warren's team, and as you quite rightly said, you feel like you'd want to play for him, is they're very hardworking. The players they brought in will work hard. They might not be, have that... We've clearly got a way better squad in terms of ability. But they're going to come and they will try and outwork us. We have to work as hard as them. And if we do, and we're good with the ball, we will win the game. But if we're sloppy, if we invite pressure, if we're not at it, and Rotherham are, which that's what their sort of baseline is, then we could, you know, there could be, it could be a sticky game.
Yeah. And Tom Eaves is one of the guys they've brought in this year. Talking of hard working, he really is a hard worker at the top of the pitch. Will run all day on that back line. I remember the Hull City game last season where he just absolutely tore our defence apart. Not with, you know, any great quality, but just pure power and determination, which, if that makes sense.
But Dino from under 13s Coventry League would have tore our defence apart that night because we were awful. Oh,
we were
game.
Awful. Yeah, there's no.
That was after
standard.
We had the Nandos.
There's no real standard to judge there, to be fair. So, how would you approach it then, Ross? Would you go with, you know, like we said, Dabo and Adam Amola, and what do you do with the cam position? It's, you know, with O'Hare missing.
It's funny because you asked me what I'd do. I know what I would do, but I just know Robbins won't do it. So I personally would go, Dabo has to start. I'd bring Palmer in. I really would. I think he needs to play. Yeah. I'd go Palmer behind the strikers. I'd give Adramola and Dabo in, and then the rest of the team the same.
Picks itself, yeah.
But I know exactly what he will do. He will play Bidwell. He will start him. I'm guaranteed, Eno. I'll be shocked if Robbins doesn't play Bidwell.
Wow, you heard it here first, folks. I think Mark Robbins, you know, for all my faults with Mark Robbins, I think he's got to look at that game on Saturday and go, Jake Bidwell has offered us absolutely nothing. Nothing of note, apart from one very good run. You can't play like that at home. Look, Adam Romola, he's had a stop-start pre-season, but for the first 60 minutes, get him on the pitch. And if you have to, switch to a four and put Panzo left back.
Exactly. And the thing is, with the wing backs, they can be adventurous because you've got the three centre backs there covering.
And you know Sheaf and Haber are just going to mop up all over the pitch anyway.
Yeah. Well, maybe, yeah. So I maybe wouldn't have had a remote if I was playing a back four. Maybe that's what you're saying.
Or the other way we could
approach it is we could, and I hadn't actually thought of this, he could start Bidwell, but we could play a back four. And we could start the team, start the formation, the 4-3-3 that we had.
That we ended the game.
And actually, I could see him doing that because Alan then could play and he could literally play Sheaf with Hamer and Alan either side.
Yeah.
Tavares, you know, he could give Tavares a start. He could play Godden in the middle with Vic on the left or something. But I think he'll probably go with the wing backs and play Bidwell and Dabo. I think Dabo will come in.
But it's nice to have a chat, isn't it, that we have an option. Like, it's just, last year it was like, we're going to play three at the back, five in the middle, two up to one.
It was either one up top or two up top, box or not box. The back five was always to box or not to box.
That is the question. And if F1 fans, Ferrari boxed wrongly yesterday twice. But there you go. That's for another day and another podcast. Right, let's get you to score predictions, Ross, for this one. Do you see a home win on what's going to be an absolutely awful pitch?
Let's quickly talk about that. What are they thinking? The pitch looks worse than it did at any point last year. I've never gone along with the narrative of last year. I thought the pitch at the start of the season against Forest, first few games was great. It was a carpet. For most of the season, it was good. It was fine. Yeah. It was a 7 out of 10. You know, but this pitch already, I don't know what, and that was with Wasp playing all last year. I look at some of the pitches and I'm like, that is That is Gillingham home return to the Rico tractor along the train tracks along the pitch, sort of like skid marks.
Tranmere, Boxing Day away, Matty Godden hat trick.
I don't know what they can do in a week.
Boxing Day?
But all I will say is, and I know Robbins will mention it both pre and post game, I don't want the excuses. I'm done with excuses. I don't want to hear it. I don't want
to
hear.
To be honest, professional footballers should have enough quality to be able to trap a ball on any surface.
I mean, it's frustrating because I remember when we first moved to the ground, it was the best pitch in the league and it was like unreal all the time.
Yeah.
It is frustrating. But last year, it was more than playable. And I got annoyed when Robbins used to sort of say about the pitch because I thought, it's fine. Like it was better than St. Andrews was the year before in February, March time, 100%. Whereas this, I don't know what this Rugby Sevens has done to it, but it's butchered it.
Ross, good to chat, mate. Really good to chat. Thank you.
Score prediction.
For me?
Yeah. I didn't give you one.
Sorry. I was wrapping up.
I know you're wrapping up and I thought we haven't had our predictions.
Okay, well, let's go. Sorry. Good. Thanks for stopping me in my tracks. Let's go with your score prediction then, mate.
Well, I'm going to go 2-0 to the Sky Blues. How about you?
I'm going to go for a 3-1 Sky Blues victory. Let's kick off the home campaign.
In style.
In absolute style. Scenes at Singers Corner.
Bidwell hat-trick.
Oh, stop it. Now you are talking shite. Many thanks, Ross, for joining me this evening. Also, many thanks to our sponsors, of course, at the Sky Blue Tavern. We'll be back next week to unwrap that Rotherham fixture and also, obviously, a little look ahead to our Carabao Cup tie versus Bristol City and, of course, the Millwall game on the Saturday after. In the meantime, you can keep across all our socials at Sky Blues Extra and get involved in the conversation yourself using the hashtag Sky Blues Extra Podcast. See you then.
Thanks for listening to the Sky Blues Extra Podcast.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.